Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home. These are our best deals of the year. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Down to business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
We kick things off today, as we always do, with the business stories. And delighted to be joined by Joan Mulvihill, who's a digitalisation expert, and also by Bob Hoffman of Vista Executive Search.
Good morning, Bobby.
Good morning, one and all.
Hi, morning, Bobby.
Now, Joan, as a dye-in-the-wool Fine Gaeler, some of the editorial comment here, both in the Irish Times editorial and indeed the Cantillon piece, both have comment around Simon Harris. Does Harris have what it takes, says the editorial. What are your thoughts on this?
I think some of the dye in my wool is washing out.
Right.
I think some of the dye in my blue is washing out. I look, at this is serious stuff. I mean, Pascal Donoghue is a serious loss to the department, to that ministerial position. Finance is a very, very significant portfolio, particularly where we're at right now in the world. And I think Fionnán Sheehan called it earlier in the week. He said it shows a paucity of talent in Fine Gael. That's a big long-term issue that as a party, they need to start addressing. I think there are myriad issues with Simon taking over this role and promoting himself into it, not least of which is that there has been a long-standing tradition when we've been in coalition parties that the leader of a party would never assume the role of Minister for Finance.
Since the foundation of the state.
Since the foundation of the state. But I think there's been this whole thing about splitting finance between Department of Expenditure and reform, and then having finance, so that you don't have this kind of constant, I'm looking after my crew and my departments. So I do think that's going to call into it. And that was the main part in that first article in the Irish Times, the comments and letters section, but also in the Cantillon report. It was also picked up there, and it was just this review of Simon's performance. Like, I've known Simon a long time. He is a good person. But I just think this whole idea of, you know, the kind of TikTok Taoiseach, it's kind of over now. We need to see a little bit more serious stuff than I met the three most important people today. What do you want? A pat on the back? Get on with it.
Yeah, there's some question around that, Bob, in the Cantillon piece about, you know, the virtues of doing a PR launch around, you know, who you spoke to today on your first day in the job. It seemed to have gone down badly. Announcing this publicly was meaningless, self-serving, and if anything, a bit concerning, as it could feed into the narrative that the new man is focused on style over substance.
Well, speaking of substance, I mean, Pascal was such a heavyweight, and he was one of those safe pair of hands that we as a country have enjoyed for so long now, and he's had such a senior position in Europe as well. The sudden shock of him going, in fairness to Simon, he's massive shoes to fill, but I agree that he needs to move away from the TikTok genre to something. This is the weightiest position in the government, full stop, and he needs to step up and change his style. And I'm surprised he hasn't been advised to do that.
Joan, let's move to a nice business story, and looks at a couple of businesses. The primary one being the company behind Mercedes Distributorship paid out 1.87 million dividend last year. This is the MHL Holdings, part of the O'Flaherty family business, doing very, very nicely.
Yeah, I think that was interesting in terms of some recent headlines too about what's been going on. People moving away from buying luxury items and focusing more on luxury experiences. Mercedes are obviously a high-end brand. But what was interesting is that they, as a group, as a holding company, so they have the Mercedes dealership, but they also have BYD, which is the Chinese electric vehicle.
Yeah.
And that's a neat strategy. You know, you're going from both ends. You're going to be covered in terms of market growth. So it was, you know, it was good. It's a good indicator of economic performance. People are buying cars. And particularly profitability improving. So if you notice, the Volvo Car Ireland also paid out a dividend as turnover increased by 5%, but profits jumped by 45%. So they paid a dividend of 480,000 in 2023, but they're up at 500,000 now. So look, there was some... There are good indicators in terms of the car market, but I think the bigger issue is what's happening with electric cars and the decline in sales there over the last couple of years.
Nice businesses, Bob, making 21 to 22 million a year in the case of MHL, and in Volvo's case, 112 turnover was
$112 million.
Yeah, what did they make? Did it tell us?
$779,000. Yeah, okay. So
they're working on a much more modest margin.
Yeah.
But these are, you know, they're stellar businesses.
They are indeed. And then the third one to announce was Nissan, who also look after the Renault and Dacia brands. They have a massive turnover, $659 million, the biggest of the three we're discussing. But actually it went from a loss of $4.9 million last year to a profit of $1.2. Profit of $1.2 million on a turnover of $659, if I'm reading this correctly, that's quite a thin profit margin.
Absolutely is. And I think they're also burdened with finance costs. In terms of their borrowings are much higher than the other two. So that's reflective in the net margin. Okay, interesting enough. Let's move to the States now. Keith Duggan, the Washington correspondent, gives us two articles today. The first one being, amid ominous polls, murmurs of dissent begin to rumble. This is around the price of coffee and eggs, still too damn high, as they stay in the States. John.
This is a super synopsis of everything that's going on in the States. First of all, you've got a neat review of the polls in relation to the midterms coming up next year. Although if I was a Democrat right now and I was playing smart, if someone was polling me, I'd say nothing. I'd say I was going to, oh, yeah, no, I'm going to vote.
Well, that seems to be paying dividends because they haven't really said much.
Yeah, because you don't want to scare Trump into doing something even more stupid than he's doing already. So the midterms are covered in it. Mamdani is covered in it, the whole issue about, what's her name, Caroline Leavitt, calling him a communist. And then he went in and had his meeting with Trump, and Trump told him to call himself a fascist. So I didn't know where to go with that conversation. It covers eggs and inflation. It covers the Epstein files. I mean, literally everything. And then his whole, did he or did he not tell people to execute Congress people if they didn't obey orders, whatever. So this is one juicy synopsis by Keith Duggan of the cray-cray that is going on in the US right now.
Bob, we'll let you deal with the second part of this, which is Musk's startling prediction about work jarring with Trump's sales pitch.
Yeah, so Trump, of course, you know, and the Republican Party, they pride themselves on this collective belief that the importance and rewards of hard work is the engine that drives the American society. I mean, it's a soundbite, and look, it's true, but Musk, who sort of is now half back in the inner circle, has come out and basically said that, yeah, hard work is important, but maybe in 10 to 20 years, something like that, for me, is a long-term prediction that work will be optional. Now, I don't know what he means by that. I think he means his AI technology is going to be doing all our jobs and we may work or we may opt not to.
He alluded to like growing vegetables. It's like, so people, you know, it's much harder to grow vegetables in your backyard, but people still do it because they like growing vegetables. So i.e. people might like to go to work, but they don't have to. But I think it's a bizarre thing to say.
The issue is money. Like, if you're not working, what are you going to the shop to buy your vegetables with?
Yeah.
So I do think there's a whole idea of not working is based on we're all going to be sitting at home doing nothing.
And AI will do it for us.
But who's going to feed us?
This is a classic example of somebody. He is gifted, but he dances along that very thin line between genius and madness with Musk. And of course, Trump has firmly decided to dance on one side of that line, madness. It's very odd, very odd.
Four in every 10 Americans regard their work as being absolutely central. I'm surprised it's not higher.
Yeah. It is higher, though, for
postgrads. To their sense of identity.
Yeah.
And 50% for postgrads. It's all about a man and his job. We're all wrapped up in our
everybody
jobs.
Everybody needs purpose. They need focus. They need something to get up in the morning and strive for, whether you're self-employed or working for somebody
else. Well, the closing line says, good luck selling that version of the American dream on the campaign trail.
Yeah.
Let's see where that goes. Bob, some sad news, really. Coming from Cork, the closure of the Cork Franciscan Well Brewery, kind of a barometer for the craft brewing sector. It appears to be somewhat challenged, and Molson Coors announcing the closure of this brewery in Cork, which is, again, you know, it was a real innovative thing when it started. I know the pub is unaffected by it, though it's run by the founder, Shane Long, so he continues to trade along there. But this is disappointing. Just
it is, and your feelings have to go out to Shane and the employees that are going to be affected by that decision. I'm hoping that the increase in craft beers and the micro distilleries around the country, which are in the same boat, that their future is rosier than this article may imply. Maybe this was just something that Molson Coors, being a multinational, found they had too many brands and it was an accountant's sweep of a pen somewhere in the US. I don't know that the behind the scenes about the financial stability of this particular business, but I would think that craft beer still has a bright future.
Joan, the article also refers to Killarney Brewing and Distilling Company.
Yes.
Ceasing operations. There was also the closure of Roscommon's Black Donkey, known for its Sheep Stealer and Underworld series. So, like, it's sad to see that these tremendously innovative, I suppose, pioneering businesses just haven't made it. They've been, you know, they've been around a number of years. They've come into what, as Bob rightly says, appears to be a growing market. But there just isn't room for all of them.
There isn't room for all of them. And there is a bigger issue in terms of consumer habits. And they did reference that in the earlier part of the article. You know, there is rising business costs. There was construction costs. They were hit by the pandemic. And then, you know, people are just drinking less. And all the statistics are saying that they're drinking less alcoholic drinks. And there's a increase in zero zeros. But also they referenced the pandemic. And I think the thing is, too, these are niche brands. They are craft brands. Maybe we're seeing now that they have a life cycle and it's leaving place maybe for some more to come in. You know, it's just one of those things. Everyone I know who drinks craft beer drinks multiple different ones. They like to try them all out. Yeah, so it's not a volume business.
These are all those fellas with waistcoats and pocket watches that you hang around.
All my favorite hipsters. But it's true, though. Maybe this is our first experience of like this craft beer industry.
And
in the first
I jest
20 years
there, but there's a sad story.
But it is
behind it. I'm really disappointed to see that. Just two stories concerning On Post. We'll let you deal with the first one, Joan. Vinted boom is driving the post office footfall. This is wardrobe to wallet. Vinted is this Lithuanian company.
Yeah.
A place for buying and selling secondhand goods. I think sellers list an item, then box it, print a prepaid delivery label, and then send it for delivery. So it really is consumer to consumer.
It is consumer to consumer.
With the post office in the middle.
Yeah, and it's like Vinted seems to be getting the most traction. It's only launched in November 2024 in Ireland. But we've had Depop, Vestiaire Collective, The Circle, and it's all around reselling your own clothes and putting them back out into the market. In fact, I noticed The Circle will offer, if you buy something from The Circle, which is, again, it's like a reseller, they will offer you a price. If you could buy it, for example, for €200, a vintage piece, a high-end vintage piece, and if you return it 6 months later in good condition, they'll give you a guaranteed price for a resell, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
But it's about keeping the circularity in the fashion industry. I think it's really going to put it up to fast fashion now. A lot of young people are really switched on to this. They're buying something, wearing it a couple of times, popping it up on Vintage or Depop, and they're really, some of them are making money out of their own wardrobe. They're maybe selling it on, they buy it in the sale for like €2 at the end of a bargain bucket, and then they'll resell it on for, you know, nearly half its original price. So it's,
and it's good to see that this business is actually driving business towards the regional post offices, which
Yes.
The upside of it.
Yeah.
Bob, I wanted to ask you a link story in On Post. The On Post chair says the CEO's salary of $250,000 a year is wholly unfair. How is it unfair?
Well, basically, the outgoing CEO, David McRedmond, who has done largely a fantastic job in On Post and keeps it as the most admired and trusted business in Ireland, or certainly in the top three, he's currently being paid $250,000. And the chairman, Kieran Mulvey, has said that, look, it's not fair that he's being kept to that kind of price tag where other semi-states are going as high as $300,000. I've said this time and time and time again. It's not just because I'm in recruitment. It's facts and figures. Housing, the metro, hospital. This story, it's all a recruitment issue. Now, for people who don't earn this type of money, they're looking, okay, you're going to pay the head of On Post $300,000, and yet Pascal O'Donoghue is going to be MD of the World Bank for $400,000. It does kind of look a little bit like we are in a very expensive economy. But we are very, very expensive.
But someone will do it for 250, no?
Well, I'm currently available, I'm just saying.
Joan's thrown her name into the hat. Yeah, you will get somebody for 250, but it'll be a smaller talent pool than if you had 300. It's like everything in life. You have more money, you have more choice.
All right, well, the jury's out on that one. More news from Cork. And again, sadly to say, of a negative nature, because it appears there's some comment, although not confirmed by UCC, that the new UCC proposed business school has been shelved. As I say, not confirmed by the university, but a number of sources saying that that's the case, Joan.
Yeah, so it is an unconfirmed story, so I'm a little bit loath to go too hard on them. But 17 million for the cost of the site, 2 million on architectural fees, and it looks like their project may be shelved. But if you read into it, it's looking at why it's been shelved. So notwithstanding this, there's also the issue around the IMI, which we know they acquired and then sold on again. It seems that UCC is scrambling to try and put together some kind of state-of-the-art business school offering, right? This is its second attempt. We've had the IMI, now we've got this Cubs project and it's being shelved. And you have to ask yourself, how well are we funding our universities that you're scrambling this hard, right? So, because if you go into it, it said that they borrowed money. The whole plan was based on a loan from the European Investment Bank to partially fund it. But a big element was going to be coming from income from the business school. The income from the business school is not coming from Irish CEO graduates. It's coming from international students from China and from India. That's a risky business strategy. And
anecdotally, it appears those Chinese numbers, the figures aren't available for this year, but we're told that they're well down, so that the revenue model may not be there. And also maybe the fact that some of the interaction now with students is online, so that there may not be this need for this amount of space, 17,000 square feet, in a remote to the university.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, that the university model needs to be looked at as a whole in terms of capital expenditure, where the revenue is coming from in terms of fees, and also, you know, how students engage with the campus and what is attracting them there.
Bob, should we be eating venison as opposed to turkey this Christmas? Consumers still have reservations, but chefs and shops are backing it. We're told again from the Irish Examiner. It's all Cork today, folks.
Well, as Joan and I were discussing earlier on, the Irish housewife bought potatoes for generations and then overnight it went to pasta. So trends do change. We're all getting in our Christmas mood. So the idea is we do cull 55,000 deer per year in Ireland. It's a lovely meat. It's quite a rich taste. But look, maybe turkey could be there along with deer, venison, I don't know. But yeah, I think we got to move with some new trends.
Yeah, and they're talking about it is very low in fat. It's a very lean meat. I personally love it.
Yeah.
And again, it's. I think people are maybe scared about it, but it seems to have got bad press around being too gamey and too difficult to cook and.
Well, actually, what's interesting in this article is Anne Lucy does write very quickly in the middle of it. Tells you how to cook it, and you cook it like a steak.
Yeah, it's no different. And listen, the chefs, they tend to lead these kind of trends. And just on that one, Bobby, just a quick call out. My sister-in-law, Kerry Hoffman's launching her new Kerry's Kitchen cookery class and private and corporate events in Dundrum today.
Well, good luck to Kerry.
I wish her all the best.
Good luck to Kerry. Finally, Joan, the shape of your beer glass can change how your drink tastes. Now, I saw a fella drinking a beer out of a wine glass, and I thought he was mad, but he thought it was the best way to drink beer because the beer stayed cold.
Yes,
the whole way down. That he didn't want a pint glass going cold.
Yeah, it's a really interesting and curious little study. I mean, I have to say, I personally like my tea out of a china cup. I don't like drinking tea out of mugs for some reason, but I drink coffee out of mugs. But I think it's not so much about the shape of the glass, actually, when you get into it. It's the thickness of the rim.
There we go.
So the difference between a 1 millimetre and a 1.2 millimetre versus a 2.9 millimetre or a 3 millimetre.
Okay.
Is the difference between the taste of your beer.
We'll have to leave it there. Bob Hoffman, Joan Mulville, thank you for a great business review this morning.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.
B- Big news. Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home. These are our best deals of the year. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.